Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful to be with you for this March 28th show. It's been 7 years here, and I'm very, very grateful on this opportunity that I have been given and honor to be with you here on the internet and to offer to you the Aspire radio program. I've been on radio for 40 years or so more, but this is very, very, very nice to be here and to be able to share this with you on the website, even at aspire.org. So all is good. We're going to talk about meditation. It is a very difficult subject to talk about. It's difficult because it's abstract to the average mind. The person who is not really into meditation or is fluttering about it, thinking they would like to dabble in it, see what it's like, try it. The trouble with all of that is that the gravitas of meditation is never really realized. Actually, to be very honest with you, meditation is a lifestyle. It is not some event. There are many techniques about meditation that are helpful to some people. Maybe a technique here, technique there might be helpful to this person and that person, but not to that person or that one over there. And why? Well, there's lots of reasons why. Their mental acuity. I have found that people who are not disciplined in their mind, not disciplined in their breath work, and can't be disciplined in their daily life to understand meditation and how it works. Some people appreciate the unconscious mind, some people don't. Some people's unconscious mind is very strong and very, dominant. And that makes for trouble with meditation. It makes it very, very difficult. And if a person has had a trauma, let's say in their childhood somewhere, typically they don't do well with meditation because they don't heal that trauma. They don't deal with that trauma. They let it linger and just try to forget it and pretend like it's not there. But it is there in all of its glory. And so when you're dealing with the human mind and the chemistry of the body and the chemistry in the brain, it can be a very difficult task to learn to meditate. So the meditations that I offer are different because they work with breath work, but tone is very important. And it takes that tone to keep those pesky thoughts at bay a little bit. And when the tones replace thought, then the person's life changes completely. They vibrate to a medium that lives inside of them that is deeply transcendent. So their behaviors change, their values change, they are more compassionate, they have a deeper appreciation for the bigger picture of their life. They don't sit around and think that intellectual knowledge about meditation or about anything is the key. The key is in the heart, as the Buddha said, to sit in the cave of the heart. Let's go to our questions. First comes from Kay in Los Angeles. And we had a little malfunction there, so don't worry about it. You didn't miss anything. Her question is, how can meditation really help me? Kay from LA. And Kay often writes us, and I'm very appreciative of her questions. Thank you, Kay, for your interest. You know, this question, and forgive me, Kay, I'm just going to be really blunt, it's so annoying when you think in terms of the bigger picture of life. How is it going to help me? Well, gee whiz. The first question you got to ask of any of us, me included, any of us, is would anything help us? Would anything really help you? Anything that would really change, you know, the behavior, the belief, the approach to life, the forgiveness factor, which is really huge. Help me. It depends on what you call help. It depends on what you think of as your life. It depends upon what you think your problems are. It depends on all sorts of things. And so that word help me is really aggravating because really, see, I don't look at meditation as something that helps me. That mentality was never there within me, never. Meditation is, as I said a little earlier, it's something that translates into a way of life. It is about quietude. And as I talked about yesterday, there's no such thing as mindfulness. You hear teachers talk about it for the public, and it's ridiculous. We talked about that yesterday. If you didn't hear yesterday's broadcast, go to the website, spire.org. You can see it there. You can't miss it. There is no such thing as mindfulness, as there is no such thing as the now. This is all jargon and things to make people think they have a great philosophy going on, which they don't. It's not that. Why would a person really, really meditate to help themselves? What do you need help for? Do you need a psychologist? Do you need a psychiatrist? What do you need? Do you need a handyman around the house? Do you need a friend? What do you need? Why would you even think in terms of helping you? See, this kind of mindset is the wrong one. And when a person goes into meditation and they see that their outer life isn't cooperating with the meditation or isn't reflecting any of the values of meditation, then they think, well, I got the wrong teacher. I got the wrong meditation. I'm not doing it right. I don't know. There's something haywire here. This is all baloney. All of this is baloney. And that's the way the Western mind works. Everything's got to pertain to something in the outer world that is going to benefit them, make them some money, make their mate act the way they want their mate to act, or make their daily life a little more pleasant for them. They're looking always for pleasant. And that's the way the human being works. So you're not going to do well, Kay, with meditation and looking at it from the point of view as how can it help me? It isn't about helping you. Who is this you we're even talking about? Is it the K? Is it the Greg? Who help me? Who's this me? People don't understand all of this. They don't get it. They don't comprehend their idea of me, which is genetic and is crazy, nuttier than a fruitcake. We have genetics that make us think, say, and do all sorts of weird things. So, no, it isn't about that. You ask me, how can meditation help me? It won't. It's not going to help you. So, forget it. And if you think it's going to, or if you hear some authority figure or teacher tell you that it will, they're not telling you the truth. And why would they? Because they're trying to get you to either be their student or whatever, sell a book, or I don't know what they're up to. But the truth of the matter is, it's for their personal gain. And that's what it's all about, personal gain. So if you want to really ask an authentic question, it would be something like, what does meditation offer me in my life? Meditation would offer you your life. And that is a very important thing. But then again, people, they don't want the life that meditation would offer because it would include living consciously. And the moment you live consciously, as Jesus said in the Gnostic Gospel, you will be troubled because you begin to see how everything in the society, in the culture of the Western mind, in your own life, is based on prejudice, bias, and fear. So then you have to have the strength of character to no longer go to those places inside you, inside your biases and your genetics. And you no longer live the lifestyle of trying to get more for less, that kind of mentality. And that's what most people are into, that kind of mentality. So you're going to miss. And it changes the way you look at people. You look at them with forgiveness. You look at them with compassion. You don't look at them with what can they do for me kind of thing. That is not the subject matter of it. You just merely look at people as being drawn to you. And did I treat that well? Did I understand that? Was I honorable? Was I kind? Was I fearless? Was I patient? Those kind of things, they're very, very important. So how can meditation help you? You know what it's going to do? It's going to reveal you, the person, the woman, Linda. And you're not going to always like what you see. In fact, you're not going to like any of what you see. And you're going to be quite surprised at what, as Sammy Davis said, what kind of fool am I? So you're going to have some character. You're going to have some counseling, some inner work. You have a lot to deal with there. And I warn you, to get involved in meditation is to develop character, kindness, compassion. There's far more to it than you might imagine. I hope that helps you, Kay. Probably not the answer you were looking for, but when you come to Aspireville, you're going to get answers, and not all of them are the way you want them to be. Please forgive me. If you're a meditator, you'd understand that. Namaste. Everybody asks me, why do you always ask for forgiveness? I get this all the time. When and if you ever become a meditator, a real meditator, you will understand why I always ask, please forgive me. You would understand that in a heartbeat. The next one comes from Linda. She does not tell me where she lives. And let me scroll down. Okay, here it is. Why is meditation so difficult? I try, but I never can get it, Linda. Linda, meditation is not something you get. You got to understand that. It's something that you are. And if you don't understand the you are thing and how that works within you, then you're going to miss exactly what you're all about and what your living is all about and what your life is all about. You're going to miss how beautiful this all is. Why is meditation so difficult? Because Greg and Linda are difficult people. And because we insist upon living from the unconscious mind at all times, our pride, our dignity, our personality, our place in the world, our place in society, all of that, our place in the family with the friends and all of that stuff, that's all at stake. And when you meditate, you're dropping your mind, you're dropping your ego, you're dropping your vanity, you're dropping your pride, you're dropping everything. You're moving on beyond the context of the limitations, the circumference of the human body. and the human brain with all of the chemicals that go on in it. If you really want to understand how your mind works, you need to read Behave by Robert Sapolsky. If you read that book, you might understand. You got to get past all of the medical jargon. I've read that book at least 10 times. And it takes some tenacity, but it will test whether or not you're sincere about your efforts to meditate. Because in the book, he talks about all the chemical stuff that goes on in our brain and how our brain assumes so much. In our assumptions, we fall. We get mesmerized. We get hypnotized. We're on drugs all the time. You know, you may have never taken a drug in your life. I never did. No LSD, no uppers, no down. But we're on drugs in our brain. Our brain produces drugs. The body produces drugs. So they are going to make you believe in certain genetic traits and certain beliefs, and you're going to come to conclusions that aren't necessarily true. And you go, oh. So when you meditate, it's disrupting the brain. It's disrupting the chemistry, the way your mind is used to getting, like a little puppy dog, a treat all the time. And when you cut that treat off, when you no longer are doing that, then all of a sudden the mind starts going wonker. You know, where's that chemistry? Where is that dopamine? Where is the serotonin? You know, and then the body is going, you know, the estrogen. We got to get that estrogen flowing. We're not doing normal here anymore. So it gets rather, what do I want to say? Grotesque, gruesome is what I call it. It takes a long, long time for most people to understand what their brain is doing and not get crazy about the brain and not get crazy because the dopamine or the serotonins or the estrogen or the whatever in your human body, the oxytocin in the back of the brain, those things aren't going. So meditation is transformation, and it is a difficult thing to understand for most people because they're arrogant and set in their ways and the mindset of their genetics and the chemistry that comes out of those genetics. They get into a certain place where it just gets ugly, really ugly. And they don't want to be disturbed. I've always said people on their foreheads, when you meet them, whether you think you know them or not, they have a sign on their forehead that says, please do not disturb. And if you disturb it, if you cause ruckuses like I do, you're going to get in trouble. And I do. People don't like you. They want to stay away from you. You're not. I got an email about this whole idea of me going against the idea of mindfulness. And how can you say such things? Great teachers of no, they're not great teachers. They're renowned. They're people you bought books from. They're people that get headlines. But the real inner work is in little pockets here and there. And it's very hard to find authentic teachers because they don't make a lot of money. They're not people who are interested in a lot of money. They're not interested in the meaning, the significance of life. They're only interested in making the cash, getting what they want, doing what they do. Your benefit is not of their concern. Their concern is their lore, their legend, and their reputation. So this is called human survival. And that's another thing that meditation disrupts, human survival. And so Why is it so difficult? Because Greg is difficult, because Linda's difficult, because Bob is difficult, because John is difficult. We are difficult people. We are set in our ways and we want only add-ons. If I'm going to meditate, this has got to be an add-on that's going to help me get something I want when I want it as I want it. And that's as far as it ever goes. So what can I say to you? Why is life difficult? Greg is difficult. Linda's difficult. Why is meditation difficult? Because Greg is difficult and Linda is difficult and Kay is difficult and John is difficult. We're difficult people. We have our agendas. And the more agendas we have, the more difficult our life becomes. Hope that helps you. Thank you, Linda. Please forgive me. Namaste. Last question comes from Harold, and he lives in San Diego. He often writes me. He knew me when I was down in Diego. I'm a great singer, you know. Anyway, how do I reach Nirvana, Greg? That's what he says to me, Harold. And then he goes into his quasi-pseudo-meditation thing, and it's just gibberish. Everybody wants to get into Nirvana. Everybody. When am I going to? I have brought my students to Nirvana. I have. And we've done it in retreats. We have these things called Energy Darshan, and they are beautiful, and they are unfolding, and the everybody loses their personality and their ego, and they drop it, and they sit there, and they just whirl in this great beauty. The trouble is with it that it can become addictive to the psychology of a person if they're not careful, where it is, the only thing they meditate for is to get to Nirvana, get to this place. But you see, that isn't going to last forever. You can't live in Nirvana, as it were, in that stage in public. You can't do it. But here's the deal. You can live in Nirvana in your heart, and that can stay there forever, and it stays there with me forever, and it can stay there for you forever. Forever, I'm saying. It will never end. It will never stop. It is a constant, and it lives in your heart as your soul. And most people never achieve the soul because they're so busy wanting their emotions to placate them out of their pain and sorrow, out of their rut. One of the deepest and most startling things, Harold, I ever realized as a teacher, and this was about 30 years ago, I really realized, and I had to sit down, I'll never forget it, that people don't really want to awaken, and they don't know what awakening is, and when it is put to them, they scare away very quickly. The whole idea is that if they awaken, they won't have any friends. And the only reason they do anything that they do is out of friendship. They're looking for a mate, a friend, something that will get them through this lifetime. And that's the way they look at their livingness. So when you really come to a place where you are going to meditate, things can get messy, and the human mind can't sort it all out. It just can't do it because the genetics get in the way in the unconscious mind. Everything we do matters. Everything we think matters, and every way we think matters. And it sets a precedent, a mindset in us that continues on and on and on in our life to nauseam, and we attribute those mindsets to being, shall we say, lucid enough to have friendships. And even though those friendships aren't worth much, they don't bring about anything really meaningful. They're just things we go through with each other, things that we have with people that occupy us. We don't feel alone. Even though all that, it's that phony, we still do it. because that's the way we are. We live on the periphery. Our whole life is about just getting through. And we want to get through happy, 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 happy. So there's the issue. How do I live in nirvana, reach nirvana? I'll give it to you. And it's not in my dialect. It's in the truest. Want nothing with all of your heart. I'm out of here. Thank you, Harold. Thank you for listening. Thank you for a beautiful weekend. If you ever have any questions, reach me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire.org. Have a wonderful one. See you next week. Namaste.